3 seconds of play. Down to two on a step back, Jay. Yes!
Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. And we're rolling, baby. G-time. 7 in a row. And, oh, it's on the Mavericks floor. The Jazz do it in OT. John, how are you tonight?
I'm great. Couldn't be better. Well, I could be better. But I couldn't be better in my Jazz fandom.
We're recording on the heels of a really, really impressive win tonight.
Oh, so much there. I thought there were some calls that are going to be on the morning after last 2 minutes report that we will happily review. But I will be reviewing them in a much different mood because the Jazz pulled off the win anyway.
Yes.
Gordon was clutch hitting that last second shot, but it was all set up by just another great game by Rodney Hood, who is, I thought he was the steal of the draft the night we drafted him, but he's bearing that out. I'm just so excited. Jazz are now the 7th seed in the West.
With, mind you, and we're going to discuss this in news a little later, but with an eyeball on a possible 5th seed if they keep on rolling like they are.
Yeah, Memphis Grizzlies are going to lose Mark Gasol for at least a month.
Yeah.
They say indefinitely, but with a fractured foot, you've got to figure at least a month, probably more like 6 weeks.
I thought I read that they said he was done for the season.
I hadn't seen that, but that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, that was the report I saw earlier this afternoon, but granted, that could have changed once they did an MRI and a look at it and see, but yeah.
You think it would be the rest of the season or the rest of the regular season?
It's a good point, but at the rate they're going, rest of the season could very well be just the regular season, because if they can't win without him, they're not going to make the playoffs either.
Well, that's a ways to fall. Now, granted, they've lost their last two games. They're the 5th seed right now. You know, that if they went 40% the rest of the way out, they might miss. Memphis just benefits from teams like Houston wobbling and, just Houston, really. Houston's their only hope to hang on to the 8th seed if they're really going to miss Mark for that amount of time.
Right.
But, you know, Jazz are now the 7th seed. Houston slips to 8. Portland is right there. And I like Portland's trajectory a lot more than Houston's. I would say in the next few days, Houston could be the 9th seed. Houston, the Western Conference Finals team, could be out of the playoffs next week, which would be something else.
Not that I want to give Devin anything to boast about, but it's kind of interesting to see where Portland has come since the beginning of the season when we all had our preseason trajectories of the teams, and we had Portland missing the playoffs badly. And here they are in the fight for an 8th seed. And Devin's over there just smirking, just kind of like, yeah, I got this.
No,
well,
not.
If we're doing a most improved player in the NBA, don't you think it's CJ McCollum?
Oh, it has to be. He has to be one of the guys that gets the vote on that.
Whoa. What about Rodney Hood?
I'm not going to take that away from him either. But again, that's two players right there that have a legitimate argument for most improved player. And, you know, it's funny. McCollum's done it all season long. Rodney Hood, he started out the season in a nasty slump. I still go back to December 19th. Or no, excuse me, it wasn't the 19th. It was earlier in December, like the 5th or 7th. I can't remember what night it was, where he went 0 for 12, ended up getting thrown out of the game. And who knows what it went from there. I mean, he turned around and suddenly here we are.
Well, I just so love Rodney Hood right now. I love our luck in having him fall where he did in the draft. But he has been really there. Most nights he's their leading scorer lately, really.
Yeah. And
I mean, he had 29 tonight. He's had a few. How many 30-point games has he had so far this year? I mean, he has just been super reliable lately.
Well, and he's learning how to close games. He's hitting big free throws. And then, like tonight, he hits a big three over the top to tie it up and send it to overtime. And Hayward finishes it out. So, you know, there's a lot to be said of Rodney Hood. And this excites me a lot, too, because as Rodney's come along, you know, when the Jazz are already almost there as far as healthy as they're going to get, you get Alec Burks back. And if Alec Burks can come back and contribute where he was at the beginning of the season, Jazz are extremely dangerous come playoff time.
Well, he's had 20 points in 7 of the last 10 games.
Yep.
He did have a 32-point game. Who was that against? Memphis. The Hood Hayward combination at wing is as fearsome as on offense as the Favors Gobert tangent in defense is. It's all coming together. If they just had, and you know, Neto's not playing bad as point guard either. I just salivate at Dante Exum returning to be the point guard with these other four guys on the floor.
Well, and like I said, I equally salivate with Alec Burks coming back, because that gives you a whole new dimension as well. Sorry, Devin, I about cut you off there. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, John, I'm glad you brought it up. I think Rodney Hood performing at this level benefits Gordon Hayward more than anyone, because as you saw tonight, when Hood's on, they send two guys to him. When Hayward's on, you know, he's got two guys on him. There's always one of those guys that is going to have a one-on-one matchup, it seems. And it works out. I mean, you saw it at the end of regulation. You saw it at the end of overtime. And this is what Gordon, I feel, has needed since he really assumed that leadership role, is another guy that can kind of carry the load or at least balance the load offensively. Because let's face it, Gordon did not have a great start to the game tonight. He had a fantastic finish. But I think the reason that you saw Hayward come on strong at the end was the fact that Rodney Hood was drawing multiple defenders and really, you know, putting the pressure on their defense.
Yeah, and I think about the three-guard lineup that Quinn was doing at the end of the games earlier before Alec Burks got hurt. So it's not only exciting to have Burks back in that six-man role, it's exciting to think of having Burks, Hood, and Hayward closing games together again. And that'll get us partially way there to where their potential is. I also want to talk about how realistic do we think getting to the fifth seed is. With Memphis, I see Memphis in serious trouble without Marc Gasol. They've been kind of treading water in the 5-8 range of playoff standings for a couple of years now. So I do find them quite beatable. Who knows what they're going to do at the trade deadline if they do anything. Houston, I view as beatable. Portland's been tough. I would give the edge to Utah over Portland, but I'm not going to take Portland lightly. And that, for me, really their main obstacle in taking the fifth seed would be Dallas. And they won in overtime in Dallas for the first time in 6 years, and that's great. But Dallas is still a good team, and it's going to be interesting to see how Dallas plays out after the break. And Dallas, I could see being a team that's active next week when teams are getting serious about trades. I could see Cuban trying to do something to bolster his roster to keep him in that
also
fifth seed race.
Also, might I point out, the Jazz remaining schedule is not easy by any stretch of the imagination. They've got a very good schedule that I think will test them down the stretch. You know, last year they went 19-10 in their final 29. I'm not sure the Jazz can duplicate that this year, but if they do, I mean, you're right at 45, 46 games. If they do, they're right there. But I don't know. Looking at the schedule, they've still got some tough games down the stretch.
Yeah, when you have this much left in the season, you would expect that. I think the Jazz are going to win against the Pelicans tomorrow, slash today when people are listening to it. And then we have the All-Star break, and they can get their rest. We can see Neto and Lyles and Hood show up in the Rising Stars Challenge, which will be fun. And then when they come back, you're at the Wizards, which I think they'll win now. And I wasn't as confident they were going to win back when the game was originally scheduled. Favors was still out. A home game against Boston, which Boston's been pretty good this season, but in a home game, I think the Jazz should be able to take them.
Boston lost tonight by one to Milwaukee. In Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, wow. And Boston, you have to think Boston makes some kind of midseason trade with all the pieces they have. So who knows how tough or easy that game will be with Boston. If they don't make a trade, I think they win, but, you know, Danny Ainge is an active GM, so who knows.
So let's put the streak aside for a minute, because assuming they win those two games, that's 9 in a row for the Jazz. Jazz haven't done that in a very long time. But here's what I'm looking at. Something to think about. You know, everybody talks about how Hood played tonight, how Hayward came alive in that fourth quarter in overtime. But everybody, it seems almost a foregone conclusion, but nobody seems to talk about Derek Favors, 16 points in the game. Oh, by the way, all 16 of them in the second half. He started the game 0-3, finished the game 7-14. 16 points. He had 6 assists tonight for a big man. That's a good night for Derek Favors, and it's been his best night since what? It's been one of his better nights in well over 10 days. So it was night, because I think they put something up on the TV tonight during the game that he has not shot the ball well over the last 6 or 7 games. So except for tonight, he starts 0-3, finishes 7-14, but Favors was huge in the second half for the Jazz tonight.
Yeah. That's what's great. That's why you need a lot of good players, because when one of your good players struggles, other players can keep you afloat until that one kicks in. Hayward and Favors really struggled in that first half, but Hood was able to keep things alive.
And Booker, so was Lyles.
That spark off the bench. Yeah, Lyles was good. Lyles was double figures off the bench, and his game has looked different since he's returned to the bench, but I was happy to see him get that chance and make the most of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very optimistic right now for the Jazz. I was taking a look at the schedule, even as tough as it is. I still think the Jazz will finish. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and predict. I think the Jazz will finish at 45 wins. I still think that will happen. They're at 26-25 right now. That means they need to win 19 of their final games, and I think that's doable. And I think the Jazz will do it. I think 45 is attainable. And they're going to be right there in that 7th seed, 6th seed talk, just as we're talking about right now.
The Jazz are 15-7 when Favors and Gobert play.
There you go.
So I feel pretty good about them making the playoffs, and probably with a pretty decent seed.
So what's your prediction for wins? I mean, they're at 26 right now. You and I started the season. We had our predictions. I said 47. You said, I think, right around that 45 to 47 range. We saw them falter in December. Injuries started plaguing them. We started thinking maybe we need to rethink that. But do we need to go back and rethink that again? I mean, do we see them getting to 45 again?
Well, the way they're playing now, yeah. The way they're playing now, I would say, yeah, they'll get to 45. They might even get to 47. what would that be, 47 and 35?
Yeah.
I mean, when you have, they're, what is 15 and 7? That's 68%, something like that.
Right.
When Favors and Gobert play together. So you go on that kind of run with those two guys. Yeah. Definitely.
Well, I mean, and they're at the 51 game mark right now, which means there are 31 games left. To get to 45, you have to go 19 and, to help me do the math here, 19 and 12 to get to 30 in that final 31 games, 19 and 12 to get to 45. It, I mean, even if they got to 47, that's on the cusp of a 50-win season. A team that didn't have its starting point guard, went through so much injury and still has a chance to be there. That's got to be something to be happy, you know, to be excited about, and a confident Jazz team too. Going in, you know, going to the end of the season, going into the playoffs at that point.
Yeah, I think that's what I said last week is them finishing on a 19-12 run to put them at 45. I think that was under the assumption they were going to lose at Dallas.
So
if they go 19-12, they'd actually be at 40. Well, no.
They would be at 45. They're at 26-25 right now.
And that would be 37.
Yeah,
so,
45 and 37.
But you'd have one more game.
No.
That would be 19 and 13.
Well, didn't we say they're 26 and 25 right now, right?
I hate doing math live.
Kids, this is why this is why you do your math homework. Because one day you grow up to have a podcast and you have to figure out how many wins and losses can happen in the season.
45 plus 37 equals 82. So 19 and 12 in their final games will put them at 45. Yes.
Okay. I'm so glad we spent time on that. Now, looking ahead, I mean, they've got some road games in a couple weeks. Houston at home, which looks very winnable now. Spurs at home when you have Duncan, who will be out. Actually, I don't know how much longer Duncan will be out, but with the Spurs looking a little hobbled, that will be a really good challenge. And then they got the Nets right after that, so that ought to be a cakewalk. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff coming up.
Yes, there
is. March is road heavy. That's probably where they're going to run into some trouble. But I'm liking how, I mean, from March 28th to the end of the season, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Of the nine, they are six of the last nine games are at home. So wherever they're hovering there, they have definite potential for a good momentum end of the season. And, of course, the last game of the season is at the Lakers. So,
all right, there's
they're really setting themselves up. I'm feeling more and more good about the fifth seed.
All right. Well, there you go. There's the Jazz wrap up and outlook here coming up for the next 2 weeks. Let's jump into other NBA news and notes right now. Probably the biggest news and note of the day. Phil Jackson fires his former point guard, Derek Fisher, as head coach of the New York Knicks.
Yeah, I thought Derek Fisher was safe no matter what. The Knicks have a much better record now than they did last year. Granted, they've lost 9 of their last 10, but you just know it had to be more than strictly wins and losses for Phil Jackson to actually fire Derek Fisher. And I can't help but look at what happened in the offseason with Matt Barnes and Derek Fisher's own behavior in that scenario. Maybe there's other things also going on that, you know, I think it's got to be more than what's happening on the court that would lead Phil to do something like that.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say Phil Jackson hires Luke Walton to replace Derek Fisher in the offseason.
I could see him trying that. What I really think he's going to do is go for Tom Thibodeau. Someone a little more established. And I actually think Phil's probably, I can see him setting himself up. I mean, I think he's going to try to get the best coach he can in the offseason. If he happens to get Luke Walton great. I'm more inclined to think they're going to want Thibodeau for the job. Thibodeau was an assistant for a while in New York, if I remember right. And I just think that Tibbs would be a really great fit for Porzingis to continue that development. Knicks are a little thin in assets right now, so I think Phil's going to try to be very careful of that. Now, I'm saying all this because Phil, I think, is playing a long game where he wants to get back to L.A. I think he's setting himself up so that Jeannie Buss can put him back in some kind of assistant GM role in L.A. so he can stop being out in New York. I think that's his eventual plan. It did not look like Derek Fisher was going to be able to pull off any long-term stability. And so he replaces him with Rambis, who, if we thought Derek Fisher was a puppet, Rambis is a Phil Jackson puppet. And then in the offseason, he'll find a real coach.
Rambis, I love it. Rambis always comes up in the interim. He did it in L.A. He did it again in Minnesota. And here he is in New York. He jumps in where somebody gets fired, and he takes that interim job for a little while. He's got it made in the NBA for a while. He can play the backup role, come in as interim, jump around from team to team, and he's set.
Yeah, I was listening to one of Zach Harper's podcasts, and he said, Kurt Rambis is just like one of the worst coaches. And the thing is, the Knicks don't have their number one pick this year, so they can't really tank. It doesn't really do him any good to tank, but nevertheless, Rambis is going to be running the show for the rest of the season. Oh, and the other news, I guess, in coaching is that it really looked like George Karl was going to get fired this week, and then they sent out a release saying George Karl is not going to get fired after all. So, way to be stable, Sacramento.
Yeah, that's us saying, oops, we made a mistake. We shouldn't have said it. We'll bring him back. Sacramento says, no, we opened our big mouths. We were going to fire him, but we let it out too early. We pull back on that.
You know what I'd do if I was George Karl? I'd just leave. I'd just say, forget it. I'm out.
I wouldn't put it. If I was in that shoes, I'd probably do the same thing.
That's a weird relationship where they're like, you know, I think I want to see other people. I'm just kidding. I just wanted to see how you would react. Just leave. Just call it a day and be done with it.
We talk about how badly Phoenix is run. Sacramento's just not very good ownership. They're just not. And their front office is run by who? Vlade Divac.
Yeah.
Does that say a lot for you? Yeah. There you go, guys. That's a wrap. I got nothing else to say on the point.
They truly are like the Western Brooklyn Nets. I mean, those two franchises are just one and the same, it seems like.
Brooklyn, Sacramento, Phoenix. Who would be fourth worst, would you say?
Trying to think of who else we're missing Lakers on that list. Yeah, well, yeah, I think Mitch Kupchak is
really. My goodness, Jimmy Buss has just been awful.
Wait, it's not Mitch Kupchak anymore. Why am I saying Kupchak?
Because he's been there for so long.
I know, I forgot. It is Buss, but yeah, it's you've got badly run teams there that just aren't doing it anymore. Not doing what they should be.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, with all these coaches, I really didn't expect to see this much turnover this season. You know, we talked about this a few weeks ago, and we all seemed pretty content to say, you know what, I think things are going to be pretty stable the rest of the year. I really don't think George Karl makes it to the end of the season. I don't. But
you think even after this statement, they fire him anyway?
Yeah, I do. What is that? You know, we're going to fire him in the coming days. Who says that? Just fire the guy or don't. And then to be like, no. It's ridiculous. It's unprofessional is what it is.
So let's look at this. I mean, you put out a list of coaching free agents. One guy on that list I don't think is probably deserving to be much of a free agent or sought after free agent, because I don't think he's sought after. But you got Tibbs, Luke Walton, Scott Brooks, Mark Jackson, David Blatt, Jeff Hornacek, and here's the guy I would leave off the list, Brian Shaw. But of all those guys, I mean, we've already mentioned Tibbs could end up in New York. Who's the next coach to get a job? I mean, does Mark Jackson get a job in the NBA as a head coach again? Or does he just stay with, you know, announcing, color commentating?
He stays with color commentating.
Well, he definitely wants one.
He wants it, but you leave him there with Jeff Van Gundy and just let him bicker. That's the best thing he can do.
I think he's going to campaign hard for another job, and he has a good case. I mean, just because Kerr did so much better when he left doesn't mean that he wasn't key in getting Golden State out of the lottery into the playoffs.
Well, he did win 50 games with them, what, one or two seasons?
Well, he helped them that first season tank so they could keep the Harrison Barnes pick. And then right after that, they turned things around. And they might have gotten 50 wins. And then I just know the record was better every year. But the main real knock on him in his final year was how unimaginative his offense was. And how could you have all these offensive weapons on your team and the Warriors were somewhere in the middle of the pack in offensive rating? And what really came down for him was if the Warriors had made it to the second round, they would have given him another year. But since they lost in the first round, they were able to use that as their excuse and get rid of him. And then Kerr came in and opened up the offense, and the rest is history.
So here
I can see Jackson working again.
Yep. So based on that premise right there, here's my call. Mark Jackson takes over the Sacramento jog, or sorry, the Reverend Mark Jackson takes over the Sacramento job next year and works one-on-one with DeMarcus Cousins, keeps him under control, and Sacramento, you know, does decently for a little while.
You're as crazy as Sacramento is.
Tell me that
he might take that if that's like the only possibility. But I mean, gosh, I would think whoever's the next coach in Sacramento, they would want to get someone who's a little more malleable. Sacramento has just been a nightmare organization for a while now. And so I think your higher quality coaches will look to other teams first before they want to set foot in that.
Probably.
I mean, it's like they fire their coach every year. And when they had a good coach in Mike Malone, they still fired him, which was just insane. I mean, sure, they lost some games when Cousins was injured, but that was just insane. And now Malone's in Denver, and he's starting to build something there.
Oh, and he's building a very good core. Denver is a very good team.
Oh my gosh,
they've got some very nice upside right now.
Oh, their two centers are going to be a nightmare for a while. In fact, did you listen to Nate Duncan's mock trade deadline podcast?
No, I didn't.
It was really good. I recommend it. Him and two other guys. It was a two-parter, and they did a mock trade deadline podcast. And so they each took 10 teams to represent them as GMs. And they made this trade to get Kevin Love to Denver, which wound up being a really good trade for both teams. And I was just thinking of that as, like, if you had Kevin Love and those two centers, that would be a force.
Who did they send away in that trade?
Gallinari, Fareed probably.
The problem with
pieces.
The problem with that move, I think you'd have Denver fans probably lose it a little bit on Gallinari. I think he's come to become a little bit of a beloved character in Denver benevolent. People love him. He's the guy that people don't want to ship off in Denver. So Fareed, I could see, but Gallo's going to be a tough sell for Denver fans.
I disagree. Right now, the city of Denver is not concerned with basketball, my friend.
I sense a segue.
I think we're segueing into our next subject. Pardon me while I just, We're
out of time.
Thanks everybody for joining Jedi and Germs. We'll talk to you next week when we have more relevant news to talk about. Yes, Devin.
What'd you guys do on Sunday?
I watched a repeat of the Baltimore Ravens winning the Super Bowl.
Alan, what about you?
Well, I wasn't going to say that, and I hate John for bringing that Super Bowl up, so we're not going to talk about that Super Bowl. We're going to talk about this Super Bowl. I did watch a football game that wasn't really a whole lot of fun to watch necessarily, but we did watch a certain defensive player win MVP and just pretty much own it on the field that game.
You can say it wasn't fun. It wasn't flashy. It wasn't, you know, high scoring, but the defense was actually kind of fun to watch, I thought.
Well, let's just put it out there. The defense was, but plain and simple, Von Miller was. Von Miller was an absolute stud in that game.
Yeah, Von Miller was fun to watch. Ware was great. It wasn't that enjoyable because the defense was so good. But, you know, once it's all over and you look at it and you just kind of marvel at what that defense did, that is impressive. It actually gives me warm fuzzies when you think about a defense able to take over a game like that.
And
it did feel like a lot like the Baltimore Ravens team, where the defense was just so good it didn't matter who was quarterback. And, you know, Peyton didn't hurt them too much. I think he had an interception, but
yeah, he had one pick that you have to give credit to the guy that intercepted the ball, because it was a fantastic grab. And then I think he had one lost fumble.
And the thing about this
was the first Super Bowl in like 30 years where there was not a passing touchdown.
Yeah.
Something crazy like that.
The thing about that game is before going into that game, I said, you know what, if Denver wins the game, they've got to learn how to contain Cam Newton, who's been dangerous and very good all season. Carolina's been the number one scoring offense all season. They've been able to put up points. And oh, by the way, their defense has been good. And I thought Carolina's defense was good in that game, too. Denver's defense was better. But they did. They contained Carolina. And they did it only bringing three or four guys at him all game long. It's not like they brought the house. They brought three and four guys, put pressure on him, contained him, and pretty much took him out of his element. Because Cam Newton's best game when he's in his element is when he gets out of the pocket and either passes the ball really well or can sneak some runs on you and get out in the open field. And he never really got the opportunity to do that. And, you know, I tip of the hat to Von Miller, really. I think he won the MVP of that game for a reason, because I think he eyeballed Cam Newton that entire game and did his best to contain him and put him right where he needed to be.
You know, my favorite part of the game was the vine that was created of Eli Manning's face.
Oh,
when he
right.
realizes he's going to get a second one, and they play the Curb Your Enthusiasm music to it. That was my favorite.
I love that one, too, because I can't help but not like, I can't stand Eli Manning. So this is very good. And, you know, I'm very happy for Peyton. I've always loved Peyton Manning's game and Peyton Manning as a quarterback and as an individual. Just watching what he's done over the years, I've enjoyed it from the moment he was drafted out of Tennessee till now. So, you know what? My hat's off to the guy. Guy's been incredible. And I hope, and I'm going to say this, I hope he retires.
I agree. Respectfully, I hope he retires.
Yes.
Because there is no better way to go out
than on top. You know, you look at guys like Brett Favre, who should have retired when he did the first time, comes back, and I wouldn't say tarnished his career, because you can't really tarnish a career when you're that good. But Brett Favre, I think, should have hung it up a lot sooner. And this is a situation where Peyton Manning, he's on top. Hang it up. Walk away from the game, because you're at the top of your game, dude. It's time to walk away.
And let's be honest, his career when it comes to the NFL, I think, is far from over, because he has such a brilliant mind and a knowledge of the game that he has a future in coaching. He can do the broadcasting. He'd be a brilliant broadcaster, I think.
Absolutely. Bring him back as an offensive coordinator. That guy can read defenses better than anyone in the game.
He can do whatever he wants. John, what do you think?
Yeah, I think he has his pick, and they'd be happy either way. I guess it depends on what lifestyle he wants. If he wants the grind of being a head coach, or he wants the comfort of being an analyst. You look at John Gruden. John Gruden was very sought after he left Tampa Bay, but he just got so used to the analyst job that he just found it was, you know, more comfortable. The pay wasn't that much different, and it felt a lot more stable. And so he's just never gone back to coaching, even though.
Oh, and by the way,
about him every year.
Can't say that I always enjoy him in the color analyst position. But that man does understand the way a defense runs, and that's what I've enjoyed listening to him, is he understands how the defenses run on the field.
See, worst case scenario for Peyton, he opens up a bunch of Papa John's franchises and partners with Budweiser to really, you know, make the pizza and beer thing happen.
So now 8 of the last 14 Super Bowls has been won by a Brady or a Manning brother.
Wow.
And I think I saw that 11 of the last 12 have been the team wearing white. Did you guys see that statistic?
Yeah, I did see something like that.
I did not see that.
Something like that, yeah.
So, you know, I'll be curious how it plays out for the next few years, because I think there's going to be a battle over which team gets the white uniforms.
Gamblers are still there.
Okay, so all of this analyst stuff aside, Devin, how do you feel?
I feel good. I'll be honest. You can go back and you can listen to the podcast. I said that the smart choice was Carolina. And I did have some faith that the Denver defense could pull the upset, and they did. But it's a lot of fun, man. You know, to finally be that team, because I remember being there, not physically being there, but I remember being there a couple years ago.
It's your team, Devin. It's your team.
No, when they played Seattle, you know, and just that feeling of, oh, we were so close. And I'm going to open some wounds here. I remember when Notre Dame played Alabama for the national championship, and it was the same thing. It was just getting blown out. And I remember when the Jazz made it to the finals, you know, it's been, there have been a lot of times where it's been right there. And this is the first time really being a fan of a team that's won it all, with the exception of Real Salt Lake, of course. It's really cool, man.
Yeah, but, you know, your team's won more than one over the last 20 years. So this is their third now. But here's the other thing I look at. Is Carolina the equivalent of the Utah Jazz in the NFL right now? A team that's been there twice, couldn't win, both times came up against, oh, that's an organization that has now lost to a Brady and a Manning.
No, the Jazz are more like the Buffalo Bills.
Okay, that's a better deal. Okay, I can go with that. I'm just looking at Carolina over the last decade and a half. You know, a team that was an expansion team. They came out, played strong, and they've really stayed competitive over the last decade. Went to the Super Bowl in 2004, lost to Tom Brady. They, you know, go to the Super Bowl this year, lose to Peyton Manning. But a team
that's... Carolina's more like the Thunder. Really talented, hasn't won it yet. Probably will soon, but...
All right.
I mean, when's the last time they were at the Super Bowl? Wasn't it like 8 years ago or something?
Well, that's what I said. It was 2004, so it's actually been 12 years.
12 years, yeah.
Yeah. So, and that was at the height of Brady's career, because Brady won 2 out of 3 years two in a row, I believe. Didn't he win two out of 3 years, because he won in 2002. I forgot who won in 03, but then he won again in 04. So,
yeah.
Interesting. I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to do let's do a couple quick questions.
Is this your rapid fire?
Yeah, let's hit a few. Let's start with Eric Green. He's on his second 10-day contract. Do the Jazz pick him up for the rest of the season? Alan, you're first.
Yes, they do.
Okay, John?
If they don't make any trades, then yes, they do.
Well, that was easy. All-Star Weekend. which Jazz player are you most excited to see? You've got Neto, you've got Lyles, and you've got Hood. This is an easy one, I think, for everyone.
I
gotta say Hood
to be the leading scorer.
Yeah, gotta say Hood.
Okay, 3-point contest. Are you taking Mr. Curry or are you taking anyone else? John?
Curry.
I want to say Curry, and that would be the proper one to take. But every year the 3-point contest seems to surprise. So I want to almost jump in and take a dark horse in here. I can't remember who else is in the 3-point shootout. I mean, who's in that? You got Curry.
You've got his teammate, Clay.
Clay.
You have, I believe, Chris Bosch was in it this year.
Who won it last year?
Phoenix, I swear.
Who won it last year? It was not Curry that won it last year. Who did?
I could be wrong. I want to say it was Clay.
Was it Clay last year?
Wasn't it Lou Williams?
Yes. Yes, it was. I don't think it was Clay. Clay went out after the first round last year. So I don't think it was Clay. I think Lou Williams sounds right to me. It was a dark horse. And that's why I said it just when you think you've got a guy pegged to win it. Last year you had both Clay and Steph in it. Neither one made it to that final round. I don't know if I want to go with Steph this year.
Hang on, I'm checking. I'm pretty sure it was Steph, actually.
That won it last year?
Yeah.
No. I don't think so.
Let the man check.
He's looking.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia, the most dependable source for information. And it says Stephen Curry.
No.
Stephen Curry won it last year?
The year before, it was Bellinelli. Yeah, that's what it has.
Well, Lou Williams was sixth man, so maybe that's why he's in my head for accomplishing something.
Fine, we'll give it to Devin. It was Steph Curry.
Okay. Let's go to the dunk contest. LaVine or anyone else, Alan?
Wow. If I knew who else was in the field.
Will Barton. Jeez, I just blanked.
Isn't Andrew
Andre Drummond?
Isn't Wiggins in it? No,
I don't believe Wiggins is in this year.
They only have four guys, and it's Will Barton, Andre Drummond, Zach LaVine, and I don't remember who the fourth one is.
Yeah, let's go Zach LaVine.
Okay, John.
LaVine.
Okay, and who is your All-Star MVP, John?
I'm going to go with Durant.
And Alan.
West wins.
This is where I'll go with Steph.
I'm trying to think of more questions, guys.
although
watch Kobe get like 4 points and they give him the MVP for nostalgia's sake.
Or watch the East win and watch them give it to somebody in the East.
Okay, last question. You guys both watched the big game.
Mm-hmm.
Puppy, monkey, baby. Yes or no?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Okay, we need to settle this. Why, Alan? Why?
I laughed my butt off at that commercial. My wife, I mean, we're sitting there. My wife just was creeped out by it, and so was one of her friends that was there watching it with us, but I thought it was hilarious. I just got a kick out of it.
Okay, John, can you talk some sense into Alan, or do I have to side with Alan now?
It was repulsive. I mean, I love Mountain Dew, and I happen to like that new Kickstart flavor. That commercial made me want to drink it less. It was like, I don't know, someone had some good acid, and they said, it doesn't matter if this is good as long as people remember it. So maybe you can say it's effective because you still remember that happened. But I was just horrified. It's like, man, they're just going crazy this year.
See, and that was the thing for me. It stuck with me today. You know, it's been a subject that's been brought up at work, and it's been laughed about now. But when I watched it, there was something so uncomfortable about this creature, especially when it was licking the guy's face. That's when I was just like done with it. So
yeah,
I don't know. I think it served its purpose, and it's kind of funny in hindsight. But at the time, no way.
It can't lay a finger on Al Gore's man bear pig. That's what I say.
Oh man. Okay. Well, that's all I have.
Commercial did you like? What Super Bowl commercial did you like the most?
Oh man. I'm trying to remember which ones there were that were actually good. There were a lot of very weak commercials. You know, I think there was some for your bowel movements. There were some for just about everything.
The one that made me laugh was the Doritos one at the end, where he dropped the chip and the baby just shoots out.
Yes, that one was good.
Which one?
The Doritos with the ultrasound.
Oh yeah, that might be the best commercial of the Super Bowl. I'm trying to remember. There was a couple of others there were a couple of others I liked too, but I thought that one might be, you know, if you go for the feel goods, there were a couple I liked the, and this one was more funny than it was feel good, but it started out seemingly like it was going to be one of those heartfelt feel good ones. The one with the Seal song, Kiss from a Rose, only they were singing about Super Bowl babies.
Super Bowl babies.
That was
actually was funny because we were sitting there and then I started thinking about all my siblings' birthdays. And my brother Jace was born on October 28th. And I went, who was in the Super Bowl that year? And sure enough, my dad is the biggest Raiders fan. And the Raiders won the Super Bowl 9 months before my brother was born. So all of us were like, Jace is a Super Bowl baby.
I'm likening that commercial right there to that FIFA commercial from a couple of years ago where everybody had to celebrate after the FIFA win. I don't know if you guys remember that one, but that was equally as funny.
No.
Devin, what are you looking at?
Not ringing a bell.
I'm having to go back and review my tweets from the game to see what was there. Now,
you mean you tweeted more than just about your Broncos and how good they were playing?
I tweeted more about the commercials than anything else. You have to remember, I have a marketing background. That's my thing. I liked the Buick one. With the bouquet toss.
Okay, that was good.
Because that was a beautiful catch by a beautiful woman.
Well, I liked the fact that they said, I'm trying to remember the exact phrase. They said something like, did he just Beckham?
Yeah.
Did he just Beckham? Odell on it. Yeah. Or no, he Odelled it. And then somebody else says he did it right here in front of OB.
I really liked the T-Mobile commercial.
Which one?
With I just blanked on his name. I want to say Steve Martin, but I don't think that's right. What's the guy's name?
No. What did he do?
The guy that totally screwed up the beauty pageant announcement.
Oh, Steve Harvey.
Steve Harvey, that's it.
Yes.
Yeah, that was funny.
I enjoyed that one.
I like the one where the guy has an all beige lifestyle and he goes into his walk-in closet, but it's a walk-in closet because Christopher Walken's in there.
Oh, yes. I also enjoyed the Drake commercial, sadly enough, the one with Drake in the box, and it was the cable company commercial.
That was a T-Mobile one too, wasn't it?
No.
Because they were talking about...
Yeah, it was.
Yes, it was. That's right. That's right.
I liked the Coke commercial where Hulk fought Ant-Man.
Oh, for the Coke?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
And there was an Amazon one that was good, too. It had Alec Baldwin and...
Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah, it had an NFL.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Dan Marino?
Yes, it was Dan Marino.
Yeah.
Where Dan Marino tells him, he tells Dan Marino, yeah, you never won a Super Bowl. And Dan Marino turns around and says, and you've never won an Oscar. Oh, good times. I will say this though, as we talked about it. The Super Bowl was fairly lackluster, but so are the commercials. This year, I thought I would give it a C+ for commercials. I've seen better, honestly.
It's hard to say. I mean, I was hoping for some cooler movie trailers. I thought the Jason Bourne one looked good, but other than that, not really. I mean, last year you had three different commercials where the dad cries because his daughter's grown up. And I went, okay, we're going to a well here. It was fine. It wasn't anything like that Super Bowl from about 10 or 11 years ago when all the dot-coms were all the rage, and so you had a ton of dot-com commercials, but they didn't really know what to do.
Yes.
So you had monster.com and hotjobs.com and
GoDaddy.
Yeah, Alan's over here thinking of the GoDaddy commercials, let's be honest.
I'm glad the GoDaddies are gone.
GoDaddy with Danica Patrick.
Yeah, let's transition. Yeah. You mentioned movies, John. Let's move away from the GoDaddy.
Okay.
You saw a movie or two recently.
I did. I saw Hail Caesar, which is the latest Coen Brothers movie. Really enjoyed it. Thought it was funny. I enjoy pretty much everything the Coen Brothers do. This is one of their comedies, and it is in kind of the same vein of Burn After Reading and Raising Arizona and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Just kind of a wacky comedy. But it was a loving tribute to 50s Hollywood, where you had Scarlett Johansson starring in a mermaid picture and Channing Tatum doing a song and dance as a sailor. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, you mentioned Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Didn't they have what's-his-name return for this one as well? They did this one with him as well.
Yeah, this is the fourth movie he's done with them. George Clooney.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's did Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Intolerable Cruelty, Burn After Reading, and now he's done Hail Caesar.
Right.
So he's definitely a part of the Coen stable.
So it's a movie worth seeing then?
Yeah, I really liked it.
Okay. You also saw another movie I'll be curious your thoughts on because I saw it as well. Kung Fu Panda 3.
I thought it was about as good as the first two.
I would agree.
I remember really enjoying the first one. I remember liking the second one pretty good. I don't remember much about it other than Gary Oldman was the peacock. And the third one, I would say, was about on the same plane as the first two. I liked the introduction of the Panda Village. I liked the villain coming out of the spirit world, stealing everyone's chi. Had a lot of good laughs.
All right.
I think the franchise is probably done, I would guess.
I would guess, too. I enjoyed this one for a lot of reasons. I thought there was it was a pretty good feel-good movie. I thought
the Goose Dad was hilarious. He had more to do this time. I thought he was hilarious.
And I'm glad you brought him up because I thought they hit it home with a very important aspect of family relationships now because, you know, you have him as the adoptive father. The real father comes back into play. And they find a way to coexist in Poe's life, and Poe finds a way to allow them to coexist. And I thought it was well done. I thought the overall arc was very well done.
Yeah, I sympathize with the Goose anyway because I adopted my oldest son and I raised him, but he still had this bio dad, and I, especially in the first few years, I kind of didn't like him. But as we got older, it kind of all worked out where my son has a relationship with both of us and everyone gets along now and it's really nice. And I appreciated that because so often step parents are treated terribly in movies, and this one was a lot more respectful of all of the relationship dynamics that would be there. So I appreciated that.
Oh, definitely. And I can totally see what you're saying. You know, you think back to some of the classic, like, Disney movies, you know, a specific few come to mind, and you just don't see that dynamic presented in a positive light.
Did you ever see Aladdin 3? I don't remember what the name of it was. It was straight to video.
I probably did, but I don't recall what it was about.
It's the 40 Thieves. And his his dad is in it. He finally meets his dad, who abandoned him when he was a baby. And I just hated that movie because the message, everyone was telling Aladdin the whole time, just forgive him, just forgive him, just forgive him and trust him, just forgive him and trust him. And I'm like, he's the leader of thieves and he abandoned him as a baby. This guy has not earned his way back into Aladdin's life yet. And they're just like, eh, it's your dad. Just trust him. And of course, the dad betrays him towards the end of the movie.
Of course.
But at the very end, he forgives him and all is happy. And I was just like, oh, man.
That's the way they end.
Never letting my kids see this movie.
that's the way it has to end, though. It's Disney.
Well, I feel like Disney's run by a lot of divorced dads. And so that's kind of the way how they cope with it, is just make sure that this message gets in there, that no matter what, the step-parent is wrong.
Interesting theory. I can see that a little bit. Hey, I before we wrap up tonight, I just read this quote from Carlisle speaking about the Jazz. Quote, "That's a team that's on the rise. That's a team that's the future of our league." I really like hearing that because I think a lot of Jazz fans get a win like what we saw tonight and get really excited, and there's always a few people tearing them down and saying, no, the Jazz are never going to do anything. But, you know, that's a respectable coach from a respectable franchise.
That's high praise.
That's high praise. So,
you guys are killing me. I'm listening in the background. Sorry, I had to take a call, but I'm just laughing at this high praise bit.
we're actually changing the name of the show. We discussed this while you were in the other room.
We're calling it High Praise now.
High Praise with Devin and Germs.
Wow. All right. Well, let's wrap this up. Unless we have anything else, you guys have anything else you want to, you know, offer in here? Otherwise,
Trump won New Hampshire. The end is nigh.
There you go.
Feel the burn.
All right. And by the way, you're fired. No, I'm sorry. I can't. That's all I can think of when I think of Donald Trump anymore. I can't think of him as a politician because you're fired. Anyway. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening to yet another episode of Jedi and Germs. We're excited. Jazz 7 in a row. And they're on their way to could be. I mean, they're having their longest win streak in a while. So let's enjoy it while it lasts. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. Give us your thoughts. Look us up on Twitter at Jedi and Germs, at Jedi Zog, at Germs Guy, or at Torn by Devin. Hit any one of us up, and we'd love to talk about any of your thoughts on this week's show. Hook up with us on Facebook, Jedi and Germs. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, Jedi and Germs. And you know, leave us a review, leave us a message. We'll respond back to you, or we'll talk about it over the air. So, and by the way, we have some great opportunities coming up going forward. So be careful. Listen very carefully over the next few weeks. Encourage your friends to listen. You're gonna. I haven't even told our co-hosts yet about the opportunities coming. So just
guys, there's opportunities.
Yeah, just listen. We're gonna have some fun stuff coming up. So thank you all for listening, and John, take us out.
There are two cage movies. One, everyone is always shouting. And two, everything is always on fire.
That's a phrase.